right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
A big thanks to Darren and all the gang on 2FM Drive for taking us through the afternoon. It's Friday the 7th of March and you're listening to Game On with Marie Crowe live from Cork. Coming up between now and the official chart show at 7pm, we're in the 2FM Roadcaster here at Virgin Media Park to set the scene ahead of Ireland's under-20 Six Nations clash against France this evening. Fiona Coughlin is standing by to discuss that. And of course, it is a huge weekend ahead for Ireland and the men's Six Nations. As well as all of that, we've soccer, hurling and Cheltenham chat to come with Alan Bennett, Jane Mangan and Shane McGrath. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome along. I did mention we are in Cork for Ireland's next game in their under-20 Six Nations campaign. It's a big night for Ireland and a big night for PwC as well. They are sponsoring the under-20s rugby for 20 years, supporting the next generation of Irish rugby. And I've no doubt they'd love to see the Ireland team get a win tonight. Fiona Coughlin is with me. Will they do it, Fiona, against France, a tough France?
Yeah, look, it's going to be tough. It's brilliant to be back here, for them to be back at home in Cork. That always brings out huge support, really vocal crowd. But yeah, they haven't probably been motoring as well as we've seen in previous years. But I think that's all a little bit cyclical. Obviously, a few more weeks together now. Changes in the halfbacks with Wooden in and young Tom Wood in as well. So a couple of changes there. But while they've had opportunities in that England game here and they were beaten well 19-3, they didn't take them. They had 12 entries into the 22 and didn't take them. Similarly, in the Welsh game where they lost 20-12, they had 16 entries into the 22 and didn't take any opportunities. So, you know, they'll have worked on that in the last couple of weeks and hopefully we'll see a change there tonight because they are creating opportunities to get in. But yeah, it's going to be a tough one. They're missing probably five players that would be starting in their pack from injuries, the likes of Alan Spicer, Usnov, Murphy, those type of players. So they're big losses to this squad.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it, at that age as well, when you're trying to put those results together and they haven't really done that. They did win against Scotland, but then the losses to England and France and Wales and now France to come. Do they feel the pressure at that age?
Like they shouldn't. I think it's important. 20s is about development and players getting opportunities representing obviously Ireland, and it's a really important part of their pathway and development. We've been obviously really fortunate the last number of years coming home with trophies at this level. But like if you look at the current Irish senior squad, how many of them actually won under 20 championships? Mm-hmm. You know, and it doesn't stop them going on to be successful players. And I think that's the important thing to keep in the back of your mind. Why we want to be winning all the time, this is just a really important step in their development.
You mentioned young Tom Wood there, a very famous name.
Yeah, like in fairness, Keith Wood kind of revolutionised the way hookers play. But I think Tom probably has more silky skills playing at out half.
It's funny, actually, when you think of the offspring of these famous players been very different to their parents as well.
Yeah, but they've probably been immersed in the game for so long. And, you know, I don't know how many players grew up wanting to be in the front row. And I'm sure he wanted to emulate other players growing up.
People don't want to be in the front row. It's like the goalkeeper years ago, although the goalkeeper is very cool now in soccer, but still.
Well,
yeah.
And I think even I said Keith Wood, but look at the way Dan Sheehan's playing.
Absolutely.
And I'd say a lot of kids nowadays want to be Dan Sheehan as well.
Yeah.
So, but Tom obviously has. Although we've seen Keith Wood kick it a few times, Tom has those kicking skills as well. And he plays a really key role tonight. He came on in that Welsh game and he offered something a little bit different. And now he gets a chance to start and see what he can do here in front of a home crowd.
Yeah, taking his opportunity, that's for sure. So tell us about France. What do we know?
Yeah, they have a lot of players. Their fullback tonight, Achebere, played last week in the top 14. He scored the quickest try in top 14 history in 8 seconds last weekend. And again, a lot of these players would have played top 14. And so they'd be more experienced players. They are bigger and more physical, but they did lose to that English team 27-10. So there is opportunities to go after them. I think very similar to the senior men's team, they have a lot of very exciting players. You just can't give them any loose balls or opportunities to transition. They transition really quickly as well.
Okay, so overall, how do you think it's going to go?
I think France would be definitely favourites going into it, but you know, you never know what can happen on a home crowd. The weather is looking to turn, which will hopefully play into Ireland's hands.
It's a great weekend though, Fiona, isn't it? And I know this kind of kicks it off tonight, but it's one of those ones where you're going to set your clock for tomorrow at 2:30. You want to sit in the, if you're not going, at least be sitting in front of the telly to see how it all plays out. And it's been a great build up, I think, as well to tomorrow's game. For you though, how do you think the game is going to play out between two teams like them?
I really hope it lives up to its billing, that they both play to the best of their ability. So Ireland have been really consistent. I know there's been blips in that, but like not throughout a whole game. So they're really consistent. I think actually the French call them robotic-like. Mm-hmm. And then France are just so full of flair. And, you know, even in that English game that they lost, like they had three clear-cut chances and they were just careless with the ball. And I just... it's such a difficult one to call. France have gone with a 7-1 split, which itself is risky enough. If anything happens to any of their back line, it'll be interesting to see what changes are made. Like DuPont has obviously played 10 and 12 before, but what shift that would happen, because he is so key to this French team at 9. And I think if they ever move him out of 9, it has a huge impact on how the rest of the team are playing. Then on the flip side, that Ireland have gone 6-2. In recent time, they've been more on the 5-3. So again, there's even risks on that, but I think that's why Jamie Osborne is playing there on the wing, just his versatility that he brings. I just really think it's so hard to call. I think if Ireland can just slow down that French pack from getting any momentum, no loose kicking, not allowing the French team to transition, keep the ball off the pitch, go for the line out, I would hope that Ireland can do it.
Speaking of opportunities, it's a huge one for Jamie Osborne, and we've been hearing since he was named to the squad about the different skills and the versatility he has in his locker. Tell us what kind of a player he is.
I think people saw it when he went down and got his first start against South Africa, and just he was seamless. Like it was like he was playing for years, and no matter what job he's been asked to do at Leinster or indeed at Ireland, he's answered it. And why he probably doesn't have out and out pace of a winger, you know, he's a really good game understanding, really strong, really good under the high ball. He has the kicking game as well, big left boot on him, but he can kick off both feet. He's just really exciting, and like he plays as if he's older, you know, he's still only a young fella. And you know, it's tough on the likes of Calvin Nash, who played well in any opportunity he's given, but I suppose the versatility that he can bring, he can play. This is his first start at 14. He's played at a professional level, he's played 12, 13, 15 and 11, so it's his first start of 14. So, you know, credit to him and what he's doing at training, that they feel that he's up to going in there from the start against France in a huge game.
So as well as it being a huge rugby game, it's a huge occasion as well, because there is going to be a home farewell anyway for three of Ireland's big stalwarts, Peter Armani, Keane Healy and Conor Murray. It is the end of an era, another era as well, you know. So, but look, the occasion itself, like how much is that going to maybe add to the pressure that's going to be on both teams, really? Because it's just going to be a huge, a hugely intense atmosphere.
Yeah, like I suppose it's important about that emotional kind of build up from an Irish perspective in terms of those players, their last home game. There's a number of 50 caps as well, getting their 50th cap. But it's about managing that emotional build up. You don't want to drain yourself of energy. But while it's important to use it, it's managing it appropriately. And I've no doubt that the team and the whole squad, everyone involved, will want to give those guys a send off that they deserve for what they've given to Irish rugby over the last how many years. Like it's just been, they've been colossal on so many occasions for Ireland. And I always credit Keane Healy to have the injury that he had, where he was nearly signing his retirement forms a couple of years ago, to come back and be such a key player and most capped Irish player ever is phenomenal.
Yeah, what I will probably always remember about him is just the fact that he was able to transition so much during his career. So even physically, to be able to change his shape and adapt to whatever way the game was played, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, and he went from loose head, he's played tight head, he's played hooker. he always is the type of player that will do whatever the team needs. And similarly, the same with Murray and Peter O'Mahony. They've been true legends of the game in Ireland and been part of so many successful days for Irish rugby. And they'll certainly go down in history.
And it's the leadership too, Fiona, because it's really hard to develop that, and it takes time. And to see three players who have been beacons really for so long as well go, that it's, whether you like it or not, hard to fill that.
It is, and I think the Irish management have done it well. I think last year we probably thought Peter O'Mahony had played his last game in the Six Nations last year, but he stayed on because of that transitioning of leadership. Caelan Doris taking over the captaincy. We saw the last game out, Dan Sheehan taking over the captaincy. But with those conversations happening off the pitch with the players that have been there before and, you know what it's about in the likes of O'Mahony, Murray and Healy. So it's important the way that the Irish management have done it and the players themselves have done it. Like Conor Murray has been sitting on the bench for the last while with Gibson Park there, but not that he's happy to be there, but he feels that he's still adding value, which he has done in the last couple of years.
Yeah, defined roles definitely. So France, there's a huge amount of excitement about them as well. Look, everybody wants Ireland to come out and win, but it's a real treat, isn't it, when the French come to town, and you can't really say this France rugby team without saying flair, and they just have it in abundance.
Yeah, like 2 years ago, the game here was absolutely brilliant as well. It ebbed and flowed, and I think we'll see much of that as well tomorrow. Like DuPont is probably the best player in the world right now. I know he was away with sevens last year, but everything just revolves around him. But then you have the likes of Biel Barry on the wing, who has just been in lightning form. He's only 21, like, he's phenomenal. Penno probably didn't play his best against England. He gets dropped and he'll be back to prove a point. And, you know, they're just so lethal. When you think there's nothing on, they can just create something out of nothing. And as I said, any sort of loose ball, you always have to be concentrating, because they will just look to go. It might seem slow, 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 but when they go, they go. And they really are really exciting to watch. And I hope we see elements of that tomorrow, but not too much of it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, a little bit. And just in terms of what kind of questions they're going to ask of Ireland. So, like, we've seen a lot of good so far in this championship, definitely areas that can be improved on, and learnings as well. But where are they going to trouble Ireland most?
Like, they're going to go after them with that power game. That's why they have seven forwards on the bench. They're going to really go after them. The eight forwards stand really close by and look to pick and go. And as I said, Ireland need to be very clever with their kicking, not kicking anyway loosely, ensuring that defensive line is really connected, because if there's any glimmer of a hole, France will take it, and the transition, any loose ball, turnover ball, France will look to go. So it's important that Ireland are on all the time and stay concentrated all the time. Even if they think the ball is dead, just keep going until the whistle goes, because they really will can turn it from nothing.
A lot of talk as well about Sam Prendergast and the physical elements that he brings or needs to bring. And Simon Easterby has said we're going to see a little bit more of that against France. Is it as easy as that, Fiona? Like, just deciding you're going to bring that?
No, it's probably something that they've worked on for the last couple of weeks. Like, every team will go after a 10 and put runners down the 10s channel to try and, you know, take them out of the game and, you know, cause them trouble. And that doesn't matter if the 10 is an experienced, a physical 10 or not. So that is going to happen. I'm sure tactically and technically they've worked on Sam and his defence over the last couple of weeks, but it's going to be tough when you have some of those players running down your channel. So he will have to set up, I think, at 8 missed tackles the last day. And, you know, missed tackles, I know they don't always focus on missed tackles as being a bad thing. What's what happens after that and the cover defence, but he definitely will need to improve that tomorrow. So it'll be interesting to see what they do technically and tactically in order to support him. You know, it's not about hiding him away from him, it's about supporting him.
A lot of pressure as well, isn't there?
Like, he's still a young kid. He's finding his way. He's going to have mistakes. But, you know, the management are confident. And we've seen what he is capable of. You know, he's such a high ceiling. He is such an exciting player. They feel that this is the way to go for the next number of years. But on the flip side of that, you do have Jack Crowley on the bench, who defensively is very sound, who hasn't actually done anything wrong. He came on in the November and basically won that Australia game. And, you know, that they know that they have him on the bench. It was probably a little bit disappointing that he came on at 15 in the last game. I would have liked to see him get a bit more time at 10, because he's still growing and developing as well. But it's great we're in a situation that we have these two players.
Does he deserve a little bit more time? At the 10?
Like, it's a tough one. They obviously want to give Sam that confidence and back him. But I just thought bringing him on a full back for whatever number of minutes he had the last day, you know, it depends on the conversations they're having with him behind of what his role is within the squad. But no one wants to be sitting on the bench, you know. You just want to play as a player. You just want to get out there and play. So, like, I think he has done nothing wrong in an Irish jersey. It's just they probably feel that Sam's ceiling at the moment, or the direction that they want to play, that Sam has that skill set.
So what about the bench then? They're going 7-1, we're going 6-2. 7-1's obviously a huge risk. It feels like we're nearly back playing against South Africa, talking about bench splits, but 6-2, the safer option anyway.
Yeah, definitely the safer option. It's, you know, I Easterby spoke about it during the week. It was more got to do with Caelan Dorris's coming back from an injury, whether he's at 100% or not, that's why they wanted to go with the 6-2 on the bench, and then they need versatility in the back, so therefore back suffer. But, like, you know, you talk about bench and the impact bench make. In the England game, I was kind of worried about England's bench making an impact, but the Irish bench came on and made such a huge impact. So similar enough, while you'd be worried about France bringing on seven forwards, I think the Irish bench has made such an impact in games that I wouldn't be overly worried about that. I'd be more worried for France if they get an injury and DuPont has to move from nine. I think that totally messes their game up, whereas I think Ireland are able to move more seamlessly players around, like whether that's Conan coming in at six or eight, Tadhg Byrne having to go back row, whatever, and then obviously Jamie Osborne with his versatility and Jack Crowley with his versatility as well. So I think Ireland's bench is more versatile than France.
Is it a psychological thing as well, like a psychological tactic that they have been able to maybe convince the players that that role is a good role to have? Because it does feel like there is a lot of value put on players coming off the bench, more so than maybe we've seen in the past.
Yeah, and I think it's the way the game has gone, the importance of having a really strong 23 and finishing strong. And if you don't have that strong bench, that you're going to suffer. Just the game is so physical, fitness is so important. And again, it's how you frame it. And South Africa, I think, did a phenomenal job in the World Cup of how they used their bench, but, you know, had the importance of their bench as well. And I think you see similar nowadays in all pro sports about having the strength of the 23, not just the starting 15.
What about the battle of the managers? Because yeah, it's quite an interesting one as well, because they're both in similar but different situations.
Yeah, so like Galtier is under pressure. You know, this has been kind of really talented French side that haven't brought many trophies back. And, you know, even that loss to England, it would be a huge blow to Galtier and the management. Easterby, obviously, he's in an interim role, but they're still going for three championships, which is really special and really important.
To make an impression, like I know we're saying he's just guiding them, he's minding them for this year, but like absolutely, this is his opportunity to show his coaching credentials.
100%. Like, there's no doubt about his coaching credentials. That's why he's in that. But yeah, he certainly wants to put his name in the frame. Mm-hmm. Whether that's the Irish job after Farrell or it's other jobs that may come on the market. Yeah, you want to be winning. You want to be a winning coach. And again, with this, it's a talented Irish squad as well. You know, and to go for three championships, never been done, is phenomenal.
So, Fiona, give us your prediction, not just on the score, but just how it's all going to play out. Like, are we going to be edge of the seat stuff or what?
I hope it's edge of the seat stuff. I hope it ebbs and flows both ways, because that'll keep everyone engaged and excited. And like, it's so difficult. I honestly think it could be the toss of a coin and it'll be a really close game. And I just hope that it's Ireland's.
Yeah, could be anyone's.
It could be.
Fiona Cockle, thank you so much for coming in. Enjoy the under-20s. It's a nice evening down in Cork for it anyway. And it'd be great to see Ireland getting the weekend off to a winning start. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us, because Alan Bennett is standing by. We're going to look ahead to all of the Premier League this weekend. We're going to preview the League of Ireland, and the Women's National League is starting as well. So don't go anywhere.
RTE 2FM.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome back to Game On, live from Virgin Media Park. The scene is set for another huge game as Ireland take on France. We kick off at 8 o'clock and we're going to be building up to it across the show. But a huge night for the Irish rugby team, the PWC Six Nations clash against France, getting underway in just a while. We're turning our attention now, though, to football. And I'm delighted to say that Alan Bennett has stepped into the roadcaster. Alan, before we get into looking ahead to all of the football over the next couple of days, when you were on last, you predicted that we might get £1 million footballer. And then only a couple of days later, we did, with the news of Mason Melia moving across the channel. But a big moment and great for the league.
Yeah, huge. It's funny, actually, my brother texted me the next day and he was like, are you his agent or what? I was like, I wouldn't be answering the phone if I was his agent. No, it's great news. It obviously raises the profile of everything up another level, which is what you want to see all the time. It moving up and up in terms of value on our market and value on our players, and the fact that he's staying in the league for another season is massive. So you can go and watch on your local doorstep £1 million player playing there right in front of you. It's huge, and it's just a real step forward and a real kind of show of where we're going as a league.
Yeah, and look, we were just kicking off with the league the last time we were chatting to you, but it's underway now and it's been a great start. So exciting. I don't think too many people predicted that Waterford would be top of the league and Shamrock Rovers would be bottom of the league, but that's how things stand at the moment. But there's another big game, or another big round to come, and I was seeing a few Sligo Rovers fans around the area a little bit earlier on, because they take on Cork City. What have you made of Cork City so far?
Good, steady, as you'd like to see. Yeah, hoping for a couple of clean sheets, as I mentioned the last time I was on. That'll hopefully steady them down, particularly as they go away from home. I know they're home tonight. they have to make turns across the fortress that it, that it has been throughout the years. They have to keep that. And the longer you get that into the first series of games, second series of games, that starts to build its own momentum. But like you said, yeah, massive games tonight. Rovers, Pats, like Rovers have to be thinking, right, let's start our season. You know, let's go. Because you're nearly halfway through that first round of games. And once that first round passes by, you're kind of getting
more. The gap starts to widen, doesn't
big
it?
Time,
yeah.
Big time. And Waterford, like you said, I'm going to try and pronounce Padraig Amon's name, but
we'll go Podge anyway.
Yeah, yeah, he's been superb, and I would come across him a few times in the lower leagues in England, and he had a huge reputation there. So it's not taking me one bit by surprise, and he obviously takes care of himself, and he's able to maintain that standard. And going from that league in the UK where you're probably playing 40, 50 games a year to coming to Ireland, I found that myself as well. You're going from maybe 35 games a year, it does make a huge difference to your body. So I think there's more to come from him.
Yeah, he's great. I saw him score that goal against Cork City on Monday night, but it was his movement. And I heard Sean Boyd talking about it earlier in the week, that when Damien Duff wants to push his buttons, he says he don't move as well as Padge Amon at 36. I thought it was great. But yeah, like an absolute pro. And like, I'm sure the one thing, like when I'm watching him and I hear about him, like he's kind of the one that's selling jerseys down there. You know, people are going in to see him, like, which is absolutely brilliant.
Big time, like big time. And imagine being a young player there coming into the squad, or an 18, 19-year-old, and you're a striker coming through. What you would learn just looking at him, you know. And that was always the thing. Any player I ever saw succeeding, they just had to just copy, go in and copy the senior pros. Do exactly what they're doing. And do it, and do it, and do it. Add it to your game because it's working for them. So it'll just add it to your game and try your best to stretch yourself to add those facets into your game, and it'll take you places big time.
Tonight's game, you mentioned the St. Pat's and Shamrock Rovers just being one of those box office ones, and it's coming so quickly as well, and it feels like there's loads at stake. But it's the managers, really, isn't it? Like it's the two Stevens, Stephen Kenny and Stephen Bradley. They're bringing great headlines. They're bringing great attention to it. And while it'll be fascinating to see the players and how they do tonight, it's the tactical setup though as well from the two of them, I think would be the sideshow.
Yeah, and it's something from when you step back and put on your coach's hat and you look at it, and that's what's raised the league as well to another level. You have an ex-Irish international manager against potentially a future Irish international manager, two people who are massive stalwarts in the league. I must say that when I retired, I got two texts outside of my Cork City bubble and my friends and family. One was from Stephen Bradley and one was from Tomás Connolly, who was a referee. So like I have a small bit of a soft spot for Stephen Bradley and what he's done, and I see other players saying it's the same kind of thing. And when you do that within a league, within the fraternity of the League of Ireland, you do get a bit of grow back and you get a bit of love back. And obviously Stephen Kenny has just done everything within the league, and 100% that's what there'll be one eye on the game and one eye on the sideline.
Yeah, and look, Stephen Kenny, neither Stephens have had the most perfect start. Stephen Kenny, they are a bit back on track now, but it'll be really good. And look, we're talking about teams that we weren't expecting to be at the top, and Drogheda and Kevin Doherty have just been phenomenal. And I think, like, I love that he's so open and honest about everybody writing them off and no one expecting them to be where they are. But look, they're right up there, and it's very early, and look, anything can happen. There's going to be injuries and things are going to derail and all the rest, but he deserves a huge amount of credit to that start.
Unbelievable, like, in terms of what he's built on from last year. The siege mentality is, I don't know, is it an easy one? Not an easy one, but it's a go-to one for Irish people, definitely, you know, in terms of everyone being against us and that kind of thing. That's an easy drum to hit and an easy drum to build up. And momentum is so important in sport, any sport, and he'll have that momentum and he'll start building towards that. And he is, you're right, he's brutally honest in some things, in the stuff he comes out with in post-match interviews, which is refreshing to see on a whole different level. But those challenges that he has in terms of maintaining that momentum and beating that drum of everyone being against them. On the flip side of that, then, for Damien Duff, you've achieved that league title now, and man, that motivation changes for those players. Everything intrinsic that you were talking about, you know, proving yourself, writing off the naysayers, everyone against us, flips a little bit, and you sometimes lose players extrinsically. Then they start looking for motivation, certain things. They might want better contracts, better money, those kind of things. They you know, they get patted on the back everywhere they go for the last couple of months. It's a tough one. Anybody who retains a league title, it's magic, and it's a hell of an achievement.
Yeah, for sure. And look, again, we're talking about the managers all the time, and to be fair to them, they are really keeping the eyeballs on the league. No more than Tim Clancy does as well down in Cork City. We have to give him the credit for that too as well. Derry City have had a strange enough start though, haven't they?
Yeah, I was looking at the kind of results a little bit. Sort of patchy. Not what you expected. Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Again, I should say, because we keep talking about them as title contenders and they just don't seem to follow through on the potential that we all think they have at the start of the season.
Yeah, and I kind of looked at them last year and I started the season thinking that they'd be definitely up there with Rovers. I didn't put Shells in there, but they, because of Pat Hoban, and had just moved there, and I was thinking if he could get a decent run. He had a run, then he got injured, and they managed to keep some players. But again, you're just hoping that those players will find their form and collectively find their form. And it seems hopefully steady in the background for the club, but they're such a huge club and there's such huge potential there. You would hope that it'll come, but such early doors at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we can. We'll see after this round now how things stand. The last time we were down as well, we were chatting to you about the start of the men's Premier Division and the men's League of Ireland. But now it's the turn of the women's Premier Division. Let's hear from Shamrock Rovers player Áine O'Gorman looking ahead to the season.
On your head of a new season, and for Shamrock Rovers, you'll have been disappointed over the last couple of years that you didn't get among the trophies. What'll be different this year?
Yeah, look, obviously it's been frustrating. I think last year we came closer, we lost out of the All-Ireland Cup to Galway in penalties, but there's a lot of learning, I think, from them experience as well, and hopefully we can bring that into next season and go one better.
Do you think when people play Shamrock Rovers that they're almost intimidated by, you know, how good the stadium is and the reputation of the likes of yourself?
Look, I think people enjoy coming to Tallaght Stadium, which is probably one of the best surfaces, if not the best surface in the country. So I think they relish the challenge and they thrive on that as well. So we always have to be on it week in, week out.
You look at the cup final and how much Shelburne relish the stadium. Who will be the contenders this year apart from Rovers?
Yeah, look, I think Shells will be up there, Galway will be up there, Piemont will be up there. I think it's going to be a very, very competitive season and it's going to be very exciting.
And from your own point of view, not thinking of hanging up the boots yet, no?
Well, look, year by year, Tony. I keep saying this will be my last year, so we'll see.
Well, Julianne will be a loss to Irish football, won't she?
Yeah, absolutely. I think she's left a legacy as well. I think she'll be a big loss to the international team. She came back on the scene with a bang, and I think she's inspired so many people. I think what you can achieve as well, and she'll be a big loss in the league, her energy, her creativity and her talent. So I just want to wish Julianne the best of luck.
From a Rovers point of view, is this the year, do you think, that you can lift the trophy?
Look, I think I don't want to put pressure on ourselves, but I think we have to be producing trophies. You don't play for a club like Shamrock Rovers without the expectation of bringing home silver.
So that was Áine O'Gorman speaking to Tony O'Donoghue ahead of the Premier Division, the Women's Premier Division in the League of Ireland, which is getting underway this weekend. And she said herself there that Shamrock Rovers will be looking for silverware. They're a big club. They've been full of talent since they came on the scene, but have yet to get their hands on that title. But they might be edging a step closer, because the news today, or the reported news anyway, is that Rusha Littlejohn, Ireland international, could be signing with them. It's not confirmed. It's just been reported in a couple of outlets, so we'll be keeping an eye on that. But that would be a huge move for both the club and the player as well, because we've seen her in the green jersey for so long. But lots of teams will be in the mix for this as well. Like, you know, it's not just all about Shamrock Rovers, the big clubs either. The Shelburnes, Piemont are there, thereabouts, Athlone Town as well, well able. So it's really nice, Alan, to be heading into a season not really sure who's going to win.
Yeah, and that keeps the attention on it. Just looking at it there, Athlone, will they go back to back? I like Galway because, you know, I like to see a bit of suffering, you know, and they've been suffering along, and that drives hunger and that drives desire, you know, and you got to have that little bit of suffering before you get to reach the promised land. So that'll be interesting for Cork here. Obviously, they're kind of in a little transition with Frank taking over. Mm-hmm. And
a young team, aren't they?
And a young team. Yeah. And a young team. And a lot of kind of players who would have stacked up a few games but still been young, having left the club. So that'll take a little bit of a rebuild. But it'll be interesting. Like, you have those, you have Piemont, who obviously have the huge tradition behind them, who had mm-hmm. a very disappointing season last year. You still have some serious stalwarts at Shells who will know the course by now, and they like to win. So they'll them and Rovers, it'll be great. It'll be the first, I think Cork are playing Piemont first game, so obviously the first games we will see a lot of statements being made about where people are, because obviously pre-season you can't really judge much on squads, but we'll see now after the first series games.
And just in general then in Cork, because like, we know it's a brilliant sporting city, and football has been so strong here, and Cork has produced one of the greatest players we're ever going to see in Denise O'Sullivan. But there must be a huge amount of competition, and we spoke about this before, for the players. When you look at how strong Camogie is, ladies football was really strong here for a while as well. You've got rugby too, but the potential is, you would have to think, is nearly untapped.
Yes, and I believe Cork have signed an ex-Camogie.
Lauren Homan.
Yeah, a Camogie player from Cork. Yeah, I just saw, saw the headline earlier. So you do like to see players come across, and that always intrigues people. Mm-hmm. Definitely intrigues the Cork sporting public. We obviously have that tradition down through the years of people coming from Cork GAA into Cork City and vice versa, either ways. So, like, I think we love ourselves anyway down here a little bit too much sometimes, but we like
you
to think...
You said it, Alan.
Yeah. We like to think that we can step across codes quite easily, but that always adds a little bit of extra intrigue when people come to see it then, and you like to play against players. I remember playing against Paul Galvin once, with Paul Galvin, he came and played with Cork City, so it was always interesting to see, but I think there should be more of it. Oh my God, wouldn't you love to see that?
Yeah.
Just move across between them.
Absolutely, like, as you see it now quite a lot with ladies football and the women heading out to play in the AFLW, and Sarah Rose down there, and not only does she do ladies football, AFLW, she's now in her off season playing soccer down there as well. So, like, the skills are so transferable, and especially if you have that athleticism. There'd be a few Clare ladies footballers as well who go up to Dublin or go to Athlone and play football as well. So there is, if you're really talented, we've spoken about this before as well, like, the top, you know, 20 most talented people are usually very good at everything. So, it'd be great to see a little bit more of it. Or, you know, just take a break, try something new and all the rest. So loads of potential there. Looking forward to seeing how that league plays out. A big weekend in the Premier League as well. And probably really it's Man United and Arsenal that is going to capture the attention. And I know Man United aren't where they want to be, but still everyone is really curious, like, when they go out and play a team like Arsenal, and Arsenal as well, but particularly Man United, are they ever going to get the whole ship back on course again? I don't know, Alan.
It's just, you know, when you there was people of a generation previous to me, and they lament about Liverpool, when Liverpool were, you know, struggling, when Man United were totally dominating, and you were thinking, God, what are they talking about? But I'm seeing it now unfolding in front of my eyes with Man United, and they're putting up the old videos of Roy Keane and Vieira clashing in the tunnel, trying to generate, you know, emotion around this game. And you're like, God, those two were just at it for a few years, and it was so good to watch. Now you just don't know. You just don't know what's going to turn up for Man United. You don't know what's going to be the problem, what's going to be the issue, what's going to be the concern for them this week. Who's causing the problem in the camp? Who's getting sacked? Where's the ground leaking? You know, all these things are just coming out and out and out. And I don't think, scary enough, I don't think they've hit rock bottom yet, which you have to do to kind of come back up. I don't think they have. What could that look like? Who knows? Will Man United be a championship club? That is nuts, like, even saying that statement. But who knows, like, where the bottom could be. But hopefully not too far, and hopefully it'll level out soon, and we'll see them coming back to where they should be.
And what about Arsenal? Like, have they relinquished the hopes of winning the league, do you think?
I keep hearing Evra's comments that when he spoke about Arsenal are like Netflix. You just have to wait for next season. You have to wait for next season. You have to wait for next season.
I heard that. Brilliant.
I just hit the nail on the head for me. So unfortunately, that's the kind of the vibe at the moment, and that'll be the way it could continue. Liverpool are just a team in absolute, you know, peak. It's so
even
great
when they
watch.
Shouldn't win, they're winning, which is exactly what you want to be as a team.
Exactly what you want to do, which is when you don't perform well, you grind out wins, you get a star man who just produces a tiny bit of magic, you get a player who might come in from the side and add and supplement, and it just all just seems to be rolling at the moment for them. It's great.
It's funny because, you know, we're talking about Man United and Arsenal playing on Sunday and that being the big game, but like, And cyclical and traditional and all the rest. But Notts Forest and Man City is a really big game.
Yeah. Looking back, if we're looking back. Yeah, absolutely. Like, and we spoke earlier about back-to-back titles and that mentality of, you know, everyone against you. And I can think, like, what has Guardiola, what has he done and what has he created and how has he done it? What is the mindset that he puts into the players to, you know, consistently get better? And obviously it's come slightly unhinged this year for them, and you can see even just 1-2% drop off in certain areas, and it all unravels slightly. But just to be able to step inside that camp and see what the detail and how he just creates that environment must just be mind blowing in what he's doing. And I can't wait to see, you know, how he will turn this back and create that again. It'll just be fascinating to watch.
It sounds like you have a real grow for management.
I have a real grow for getting the most of potential and seeing how people get that out of people, do you know? Because it's so magical, do you know what I mean? In terms of some people have it and some people don't. Then in other situations, they're just able to get at whatever stage that manager is in their lives. They're just able to. They're at a perfect balance where they can just get the best out of that group, and it's there's so many small idiosyncrasies to it. It's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it really is. Alan, thank you as always. I'm not sure when we'll be back down again, the Roadcaster, but we'll be giving you a shout anyway when we are. Looking forward to seeing how the League of Ireland season goes and getting your thoughts on it maybe a few times as well before it finishes over the next few months. Alan, thank you so much. We're going to take another very quick break here at Virgin Media Park, but stay with us because we're going to be talking hurling and Cheltenham after these.
This is
2FM.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Welcome back to Virgin Media Park. We're here with PwC, who are one of the IRFU's longest running sponsors. They've reached a huge milestone of 20 years of supporting underage rugby in Ireland this year. Remarkable stuff. We're turning our attention now, though, to racing. And as every Friday brings us, it brings us Jane Mangan. And she's here. How are you, Jane?
I'm very well. We are 4 days out from the Olympics, Marie. I tell you, the build-up is almost as big as the monster itself.
Yeah, well, it does feel like that now, I have to say. Everywhere I look, I'm seeing those big posters with Ruby Walsh's very white teeth on them. So, there's no escaping it, that's for sure. And we are going to get to it in a minute, Jane. And I know people will be itching to hear you talking about Cheltenham. But let's just start here at home, though, and other things that are going on.
Yeah, this weekend we have domestic action from Bourne Park tomorrow, featuring the prestigious Tetra Tima Cup. And on Sunday we'll go to Naas. But before we do that, we'll look at the Imperial Cup at Sandown. This is a race where if you win this race and manage to win any race at the Cheltenham Festival, you will win £100,000 of a bonus. It has never been done, but it has been attempted. When Langer Dan won this 3 or 4 years ago, he ran into none other than Galopin Deschamps when he was second in the Martin Pipe at the Cheltenham Festival. We all know how that turned out. So last year it was won by Go Dante, who ran in the county. He's back in here. He's currently second favourite and he also has a county hurdle entry. The current favourite is Nicky Henderson's Bo Zenith. But there is an Irish interest in here, courtesy of Batman Jurak, with JJ Slevin riding for William Mullins. He was a faller at the last hurdle and running quite well at the Dublin Racing Festival last time. And he too has a county hurdle entry. It's a big field. It's a big field handicap. It's an unusual and unorthodox double to try and do. But with £100,000 on offer, I'm sure the winner may well throw their hat into the ring for next week.
And then, Jane, Cheltenham, like, where do we even start? There's so much happening in those 4 days and it captures the attention of absolutely everybody. I know we could go through every day, but talk me through what you're looking forward to most.
Well, I suppose we may as well start with the Prestbury Cup. The thing for me that makes Cheltenham special is the British versus Irish competition and what goes with that. And
so
we have the rugby, of course,
Jane,
tomorrow in Dublin. I'm a small bit, a bit like yourself. You know, we like to go nice and unassuming until
like beat
there's
the neighbours.
Until there's a British and Irish challenge and then we go berserk. But last year, look, the Prestbury Cup finished 18-9. The year before that, it was 18-10 in favour of the Irish, obviously. And lest we forget, in 2021, Ireland won 23 of the 28 races. Now, I don't expect that kind of a result this time around. And I expect Britain to have more than 10 winners because remember, this time last year, Nicky Henderson withdrew most of his horses. This time around, he's got Constitution Hill and John Bond to name just two. But what you're really looking for is the championship races. Can Tupo go back-to-back in the stairs? Can Constitution Hill become the first horse since Hurricane Flight to regain the champion hurdle crown, having not won it? Can John Bond finally win at the Cheltenham Festival? And can Galopin Deschamps join best mate Arkell and Cottage Rake by winning 3 Cheltenham Gold Cups? Those are the kind of the special results. The other results then you're looking for, aside from the obvious Gordon Elliott and Willie Mullins, Gavin Cromwell, Henry de Bromhead results, you're thinking, can Terence O'Brien's answer to Cafe land a fairy tale result in the handicap chase for John Shinnick? Could John Flavin have a big winner? Could Sam Curling land the Hunter's Chase? There's so much more to the Cheltenham Festival from an Irish perspective than just the mega super stables. There's a lot of people making their journey across this weekend. The first of the contingent for Tuesday will travel across the Irish Sea on the boat tomorrow. There is probably their entire year has been building around this, Marie. So hopefully for them, nothing goes wrong between now and then.
Okay, look, I know you said there's lots more going on than the superstar stables, but I do love the superstars. Tell me about Galopin de Champs and how close Galopin de Champs is to making history.
Yeah, it actually, for me, doesn't look like as good a Gold Cup as he has won and competed in before. He's beaten most of this opposition already. I think he has to underperform to get beaten, if I'm honest. Banbridge is obviously throwing a very good line of form from the King George into the mix for Joseph O'Brien. It looks like Factifoil will go for the Ryanair, meaning that JP McManus will supplement, I know the way you're thinking, for the Gold Cup. Monty Starr, Corbett's Cross. And after that, it's big figure odds. So I don't think he actually has to be at his best to win his third Gold Cup, which is saying something. He's now at the age of 9, but looks like he's still in the prime of his life. And there was a really special atmosphere at Leopardstown when he won at the Dublin Racing Festival. And if he were to come home in front on Friday, I think Presbury Park would really light up.
Yeah, I think so as well. It's just... To compare him, he's like the Messi, isn't he? He is our Messi, actually.
you kind of need, everybody needs a superstar. You know, you had Serena Williams for women in the tennis. Yeah. You have Messi and Ronaldo. Every sport needs a superstar. And it seems to be that Constitution Hill is the best over hurdles. And that, you know, Ireland have the best horse in training with Galopin de Champs. And I hope that is how it turns out to be. And look, hopefully everybody gets there and nothing goes wrong between now and then. The last thing you want is a horse falling or something... you know, out of people's control happening. But there's a lot of water to pass between now and next Friday. The 28 races, as I said, I hope the Irish land most of them, but it's going to be competitive.
You mentioned Constitution Hill there and the battle that Constitution Hill is going to have with Brighter Days ahead, to name but one. How do you think it's going to go? And do you think that we're going to see the Constitution Hill, maybe the old one back again?
Yeah, like he's only 8. I think we're guilty of kind of writing him off a bit prematurely. He's never been beaten. 10 runs. He's never actually just been over-raced. I think it's very simple how the race is going to be run. Brighter Days Ahead is a pacemaker in there with King of Kingsfield. She'll probably be the strongest stayer in the race. So they'll really drag it with a relentless pace from the very, very start. But I don't think that's an issue for Constitution Hill. I think he's got it all. It's wonderful that the mayor's taking him on. It really adds spice to what the race really needed. But if he's at his A game, like he was 2 years ago, I think he's the best we've seen since Sister Bracken. I think he'll probably prove it. But we needed the mayor in there to give context to the race, because with every respect to State Man, we know he can't beat an unsung Constitution Hill.
Okay, so Jane, you never let us down. You never let the Game On listeners down.
Don't be lying to the public. You're on air. Yeah, that's terrible. I can't guarantee a winner on air.
Rarely.
Rarely. That's more accurate, yeah.
So,
if we're talking about next week, if we're talking about next week, I really like Angel's Dawn and Hunter's Chase. She runs in the race after the Gold Cup on the Friday. I think she's near top of the market. She isn't too short, I don't think. She's around 7-2. Angel's Dawn for me on the Friday. And if people are looking for a horse this weekend, don't forget the Leinster National is on from Naas amongst the Grade 2 novices hurdle as well. It's quite a good card if anybody local wants to tip into Naas. Kintar Kalanisi is currently the favourite, but I like Panda Boy to run a big race for Ricky Doyle and Martin Basil.
Jane, have a great week. I'm looking forward to seeing you and hearing you for it. It's your Olympics, so enjoy every bit of it, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jane. We're going to take another very quick break. Stay with us, though. We do have a hurling chat to come. The small matter of Clare and Cork this weekend. Shane McGrath will preview all the action.
This is 2FM.
Welcome back to Virgin Media Park. We are here with PwC, a proud sponsor of Ireland's next generation of rugby talent. PwC are very excited about the future with the emerging talent that promises to continue a legacy of excellence. And it'll be getting started tonight with Ireland against France in the under-20s, and a big night for Ireland as they hope to return to winning ways. We're talking hurling, though. Shane McGrath joins me on the line. Shane, I'm very glad for once to be talking to a Tipperary person, because I want to talk about Clare and Cork, and I want to get the neutral view on it. Clare are back, Cork are back. How's this going to go?
Hard to know, like the deaf dog, or like the deaf dog, hard one to call, as we say. So I think it's a big one for Clare though, Cusack Park, because just didn't perform there at all. The last thing is Wexford, and I know they're very proud to play for Clare, but they're very proud when they play for Clare and Cusack Park. And I heard a great quote actually before from a Clare person. He said a 50-50 ball in Cusack Park will always be a Clare ball. So I think that's kind of,
I like it.
They feel they'll have to perform there at Homebury, because they maybe let themselves down and the crowd down the last day. So look, massive performance last day. Big players, our lads stepped up, and what was a hard week losing Shane O'Donnell, like Sean Rain and Jack O'Neill. So like, how do I see it going? I think it's a must win for Clare in regards if they want to stay up in the league. I think if they lose this game, realistically, they're going to be looking at relegation. Like, so Cork will want to build on what they did against Kilkenny, and to be honest, Marie, looking at their forwards and looking at their team, when they have everybody back, I think they're very, very close to Limerick in terms of strength and depth in their panel. And when they get everyone back, they're going to be a serious force this year. So it'll be interesting to see. The only team I can see at the moment that's named is Limerick. So it'll be interesting to see how they go at it. But I think there's a lot of pride at stake for the Clare lads there playing in Cusack Park. And that might be the 1% to get them over the line.
You could definitely sense that after the Limerick game and listening to the interviews from the senior players and how disappointed they'd been with the start, and almost it was like they just went back to basics and started afresh. And they have started afresh, but look, April 20th isn't that far around the corner either, so we do get the sense that we're kind of heading for that championship time now. March, like, it's not that far away, but there's going to be a lot of interesting games this weekend as well, because they're coming thick and fast now, and we're getting to see and know a little bit about where the teams are at. And while I'm saying Cork and Clare is really interesting, Limerick and Galway is interesting as well, Shane.
Yeah, it is. And as I said, the Limerick team is the only one I can see named at the moment. And like, they have been naming maybe 6 or 7 kind of regulars in most of their starting teams, Marie, but they've actually, when I call them regulars now, that lads we're used to seeing, they've actually 11 guys we would normally see in their top 15, top 16. So, you know, they're going after this, because let's be honest, Marie, people want to get their business done like as quick as they can. They don't want this to be going down to the last weekend having to get a win. I think a lot of teams maybe want to get it done and get it dusted and avoid that relegation trap, so that if they are thinking about maybe taking an extra week for some of their players before championship begins, or maybe some teams don't even want to get to a league final. That's just the way it is, I suppose, right now. But I think Limerick are going after this. It's at home, 11 regulars. Peter Case is on the bench. Carole Hegarty's on the bench. Dermot Burns has to take a rest this week because, sure, nearly the whole population of Clare attacked him there in the Gaelic grounds last week, Marie. So what do you do? But I just think it depends on what the Galway team is named. Michal Donoghue has gone fairly strong since the first day out against Tip. So I just think it's hard to read into how they're going to go at it. But I think they will go at it hard, as they'll want to get the business done. But I'm just looking at Limerick's team and who could come in off the bench as well. And big games for the likes of Barry Murphy, Colin Coughlin, Nathan O'Connor, who are very close to the thing, and they'll want to push on and kind of cement the place. So I think with all those things and it being on in the Gaelic grounds, I think Limerick will win that match, Marie.
And you're kind of seeing the value of momentum as well, and kind of the lifts that it can give a team when they do get a win, especially if it's a surprise win. And with that in mind, then, what about Kilkenny and Tip?
Yeah, look, I think in 1B, I actually think Antrim and Leash, for all the reasons with the sickness or not, could be potentially be the game of the weekend, because it's like a relegation busting game, like, you know. But I think Tip Kilkenny has potential for that as well, because, like, if, like, say Tip are on 6 points, Kilkenny are on 4 points, but if either of them lose, and the way games are coming, you just don't know how you're going to end up. So obviously there's a fierce rivalry between Tip Kilkenny. I know myself going down there, it's always a hard place to get a result. And I think Liam Cahill will go strong like he has in all the games. He's gone as strong as he can. And I think Derek Ling will name his strongest team of the year for this one, Marie. So with all that, two really strong teams, there'll be a great atmosphere down there. There'll be a great buzz around Nolan Park for us. You know, any neutral in or around the area would go to a Tip Kilkenny game. And with a lot on the line in terms of the league and trying to get lads back, it is a tough one to call. But look, I felt Tip were in a good place for the Cork game, and I feel with the rest they got last week, I think they're in a good place as well. I know a few of the Kilkenny lads are saying that all the Tip players are nearly the same, so that might be pinned up in a wall or put up in a WhatsApp group maybe for this match as well. So these are all 1%ers, but I think Tip, I think Tipper, they've a lot done, Marie, and they really, really want to find out their team. And if you want to find out about yourself, going down playing Kilkenny and Nolan Park is a great place to find out about it. And I think with all that being said and the competition that's there at the moment, I do fancy Tip to win it.
OK, you mentioned Andrew Malish there and being the game of the week. It's certainly given us enough headlines anyway throughout the week with the news that the Antrim players had an illness within the camp. Who's that going to motivate more, do you think, Leash or Antrim?
Look, I don't know what it'll do for either team, to be honest, Marie. Maybe the Leash lads might use it for something, but I just think this is really do or die for Antrim. I think they haven't been going well at all. They've been getting a lot of bad press. They've taken a lot of heavy beatings. But they did play well last week, and I'm sure they will take confidence from that. But it's at home. It's, as I said, this is a must win. Like, whoever loses, this is gone. And I do think that the more motivation will be there for Antrim. Also, Marie, I know you're probably running short on time, but like Leash.